Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. 201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. It's all presented by Andrew Mark right here on Giants.com. Of course, we're 2 days off the wild card weekend of the NFL playoffs. Rather ugly weekend, Lance. I talked about this yesterday a lot. The games really weren't of high quality, in my opinion. Two of the games got ruined by quarterback injuries, which you never like to see, especially in the postseason. And I think it must be a specifically annoying weekend for a Giants fan watching those games. And quite frankly, seeing a bunch of teams that I think that if the Giants are playing their best football, they're better than all but maybe one or two of those teams.
Well, we talked about this leading up to the playoffs, John, that had they backed their way into the playoffs or had they played more consistent football late in the stretch, they probably would have entered as one of the most dangerous teams because they certainly have the pieces and the personnel in place to knock off some of these squads that went out there this weekend. I mean, Joe Webb comes out there in place of Christian Ponder. That clearly affected the Minnesota Vikings. They could only ride Adrian Peterson so much, and then RG3 winds up re-aggravating the knee injury, and that affected the Redskins' offense because they were not leaning on Alfred Morris as much as they had done in games previously. They lean on Morris, and he carries 20 to 25 times. You know, RG3 doesn't have to throw 20 to 25 times, so it really threw off the Redskins' offense.
Well, things open up for Alfred Morris because of the threat of RG3 on the play-action pass and taking the ball outside on the perimeter. And obviously, once he hurt his knee, and we're still waiting for the
Medical report,
exactly.
But there's been a lot of speculation, John, that he has a partially torn ACL and LCL.
Well, a partially torn ligament is basically what a really bad sprain is.
Yeah.
So, you know, that wouldn't require surgery. That would require rehab, and he would be back for next season if that was the case. A total tear is a different thing. You're talking about grafts and things of that nature, and then all of a sudden you're in trouble. So we don't know the severity, that was the word I couldn't find before, of the injury yet of Robert Griffin III. But to me, the Redskins defense did all it could to hang on in that game. After the first two touchdown drives, they went a 14-0. The offense gave them nothing, and that Redskins defense was basically on the field for the rest of that game. And they still held the Seahawks to a reasonable amount of points, kept them out of the end zone, forced them into field goals, got that big turnover from Marshawn Lynch. And you know what? They did as good as they can, but with RG3 hurt, they just couldn't do enough to do it.
And the Redskins' defense that you just touched on, John, has played very effectively over the last couple of weeks. I mean, they dramatically have improved, given that they lost their top two pass rushers early in the season.
Yeah.
I think Jim Haslett deserves a lot of credit for how he has tweaked the scheme. He's mixed and matched personnel. You know, London Fletcher just never gets old. The guy continues to make plays. The secondary has been playing more consistently. I think had they been able to overcome RG3's injury, they could have maybe went on a deep ride throughout the postseason and maybe made it to the Super Bowl. I like the Redskins a lot. I thought they were balanced on both sides of the football.
201-939-4513. Let's go to our phones. Our question today is really regarding the Giants secondary. Do you think Prince Amukamara showed that he can be counted on as a starting cornerback next year? We'll throw Jerron Hosley into that mix a little bit. Can you rely on him to be a top three corner? Can he be that slot guy, that third cornerback, assuming Corey Webster is going to be back as the other starter? Can you count on those young guys in the secondary to come in next year and do a good enough job to get this secondary better? Or do you have to go outside the team in terms of free agency, the draft, to try to improve that position? 201-939-4513. Nick's up in Connecticut. Good morning, Nick.
Hi there. First time, long time.
Thanks, Nick. What's up, pal?
I just wanted to talk about Prince. I felt like he was a good cornerback. I mean, obviously he's still young in the league, very young, and he made some good plays, made some bad plays, and I feel like definitely right now he's a strong player to work into the rotation. But starting, maybe, but definitely a couple of years from now when he matures, I could really see him being that starting cornerback and really being the next maybe Corey Webster, you know, in the secondary. So I'm going to hang up and hear what you got to say about that.
I appreciate the phone call, Nick. Thanks so much. And Prince Amukamara, I think, you know, took a real big step in the right direction this season. Number one, because for the most part, he was able to stay healthy. Remember, a year ago, the biggest problem with Prince Amukamara was he wasn't on the football field, and he couldn't make an impact for this team. This year, they relied heavily on him because Corey Webster got hurt, had an up-and-down season. Jerron Hosley also was in and out of the lineup. And, you know, outside of those three, let's face it, the Giants didn't have too many other options. Justin Tryon, they mixed and matched in there. Michael Cole was on the team, then he was waived. So Prince Amukamara was probably the most consistent element of that secondary this season, specifically with the corner group outside of the safeties who also had been banged up throughout the course of this season. I think that if he could continue to put the work in during the offseason, OTAs, mini camps, and prove that he could be a durable corner, that's going to be the guy that the Giants are going to lean heavily on. It's just a matter of can they find the right complement if they choose maybe not to bring back Corey Webster or restructure his contract.
Well, I think the Giants also protected Prince to a certain extent this year in terms of how they used him. Corey Webster was consistently lined up against the opposing team's best wide receiver, whether it was Torrey Smith or Dez Bryant or Roddy White. I can go down the list, you know, all year long here, and you can list all the top. A.J. Green against the Bengals. You can go through all these guys, and it was Corey Webster's job to slow down the number one opposing wide receiver. So Prince was on the other side dealing with the number two guy. So, A, that makes it easier. And sometimes, quite frankly, it was a number three guy if the best wide receiver moves into the slot where the Giants had either Jaron Holzer. So Prince didn't have to cover the best wide receiver one. He was also given some help over there over the course of the year, number two. And those two things, I think Prince will have to grow next year into a corner that is capable of trying to shut down the other team's best wide receiver. It adds a lot of pressure to the equation. It makes things more difficult. But if you want to be a top corner, you want to be a first-round pick, you want to earn that type of money, that's what you have to be able to do.
And one of the first things that Jerry Reese said heading into this season, John, Prince Amukamara needs to start playing like a first-round pick.
You got it.
Reporters had asked him heavily about what the expectations are for their first-round pick, and he did not shy away from saying that. The pressure was on Prince Amukamara this season, and that's why I said the first step was for him to play more than just seven games, which was what he had gone out for last year and then was able to at least contribute consistently during the postseason. More and more reps that he gets, the more and more opportunities he gets to go up against the top receivers, as you just said, will determine what his future is with respect to the Giants and the rest of the NFL. And I think that moving him along slowly is not a bad thing.
No.
In which the Giants went about this season.
Well, you're trying to build his confidence, I think. And I think
Correct.
That was a part of the way the Giants did this and one of the reasons. Last year, I think everyone seemed to think, and based on quotes in the locker room, I'm not a Simon Prince has said, I don't know if it's true or not, but there seemed to be a lack of confidence. Or people seemed to think there was a lack of confidence coming from Prince and Mukamara. So I think you build him up slowly, you don't give him such a big responsibility, and you try to grow him into a better player. Now, heading into next year, can you maintain that confidence? Can he play that well again? We'll have to find out. But he seems to have the skill, the physicality, the ability to do it. We just now have to see it consistently next year. But another thing, too, you can't say Prince did a great job this year, in my opinion. I don't think you can say anybody in the secondary did a great job when you're ranked that low in terms of pass defense. You're on a bottom three, bottom four team in terms of defending the pass. I can't say anybody in that secondary had a great year. Because, quite frankly, how do we know if Prince was doing really well? Because if the other team's looking at the number one wide receiver first, and he has a big game, Prince doesn't even get looks over there. We don't know if he's covering his wide receiver well or not. So until we get improvement from that pass defense as a whole, Lance, I can't give anybody in that secondary from Prince to Webster to Will Hill to Roll to Phillips. I can't give anybody too much credit because they gave up passing yards hand over fist.
The best parallel that I could build towards what you were just alluding to with respect to Prince Amukamara is Jaron Hosley, his senior year at Virginia Tech, remember. He had that huge junior year with all those interceptions. What happened as a senior? Nobody threw the way of Jaron Hosley. So I'm not saying that he didn't have a good season, but you're right. If you're not getting footballs thrown in your direction, clearly you're doing something right to a certain degree, but also it's because of your reputation or somebody else is getting beat opposite you. That's why they're not looking in your direction. So Prince Amukamara was shielded for the most part. They saw a lot on film, the Giants' opponents, that were going to target Corey Webster. We see that there's ways to get past him. And another thing that I'm going to throw out in terms of Prince Amukamara needing to improve in is basically getting better in stopping the run or providing an extra layer of security to help the linebackers and the defensive line. Because there were times that you could point to throughout the course of the season that teams were killing the Giants on the ground, not just because of the defensive linemen and the linebackers, but also the secondary not providing enough support on the back ends. That's an area that I think Prince Amukamara will certainly look to improve on.
And, of course, the pressure was put on the secondary this year, more so than I'm sure the Giants would have liked, because there wasn't as much of a pass rush. And when you don't get to the quarterback, it's a symbiotic relationship between the secondary and the defensive line. When one struggles, the other one has to step up. And quite frankly, the way the Giants were constructed, Lance, with these two young corners that they relied so heavily on in Prince and Hosley, they needed that pass rush to step up to take the pressure off those guys a little bit. And quite frankly, they didn't do that.
It goes hand in hand, John. You get pressure on the quarterback, your secondary is not going to be in a precarious position. If your secondary doesn't play well, then clearly your defensive line is going to be a step back in terms of getting to the quarterback. So, you know, they need both of those facets to play more consistently. I think that was evident throughout the course of this season. And if they get that improvement, you know, the Giants' defense should be able to regroup next season. Let's not forget, a lot of the personnel in place has a lot of experience, won a Super Bowl. It's not as if these guys forgot how to play football overnight. It was just a matter of a breakdown in the scheme and a breakdown in individuals winning their man-to-man battles. It wasn't just one player. It was all across the board. And that's why when you threw out earlier, John, you know, can you give Prince Amukamara a tremendous amount of credit for how he played this season? Yes, partially, but also, let's not overlook the group as a whole struggled mightily, whether it be against the run, whether it be against the pass. And right now, Giants fans are not looking and saying, well, you know, this season wasn't all lost because we had one or two players that went out there consistently and gave it their all. They're not in the playoffs because the group as a whole did not execute. That's what really matters.
And football is the ultimate team sport. It's very hard to judge anybody in football in a vacuum without considering the overall result. Obviously, if you're sitting there watching the All-22 film, you can zero in, see if the guys do as an assignment. We don't have that luxury. I guess I could go back on the Game Rewind and watch all these games and watch Prince. By the time for that, I'd do it. But I think as a whole, when you look at the struggles the secondary had and the defense had, you can't go too nuts about anybody, like I said before, having a great season.
Related to the playoff topic that we were talking about earlier with respect to had the Giants gotten in, they would be in good shape to maybe make another run. Andrew at Big Blue, I always butcher his
Big Blue Viator.
Yes, for some reason, you know,
you
I want to say
it.
Aviator, but then I remembered I butchered it earlier in the season. So my apologies, Andrew. But anyway, he writes, if
try
Giants,
now, Big Blue Viator.
Big Blue Viator.
There we go. You got it. There we go.
Very fluid. If the Giants won their games, they'd be heading to Atlanta. 11-5 was very, very doable.
Well, I mean, you're assuming you beat the Seahawks this week,
true,
too, which would have been not an easy task. But
not at all. I mean, that would have been a very difficult task.
But look, the Giants showed when they played their best football and they showed up this year, they could beat anybody in the NFL. The problem is that they didn't do it consistently.
And Seattle, by the way, I think to me could really run the table now. I like that matchup against Atlanta.
I disagree.
You think that Falcons offense is going to be able to click enough against that Seattle defense?
I think they'll be good enough. Yes, I do.
And that Seattle offense could cause havoc for that Atlanta D. That Atlanta D was not a shutdown defense. I know they did
it
to the Giants, but the Giants even had the ability to move the football in that game.
I think that Falcons team is very underrated. I think teams, despite the fact they're number one seed and they have home field advantage, I think they have been overlooked a little bit by people. I think they're the best team in the NFC.
They have a lot to prove, though, remember.
They're balanced, too, offense, defense. None of these other teams are balanced, in my opinion. The 49ers, Kaepernick at quarterback, their offense struggles. Packers' defense isn't very good. Seahawks have
a football great.
Exactly. Seahawks don't play well on the road. And to ask them to win potentially three straight Eastern games in a row, that's asking a lot of the West Coast team.
I think they've taken a step in the right direction, though, in winning games. They had that big win in Chicago this season. You're right. It's a tall order. But I think of those three teams that you just named outside of Atlanta, Seattle's the most balanced.
I would tend to agree with that. And they are better this year on the road. I will not debate that. They've gotten better this year, no question. But I think that duo of Falcons wide receivers, their defense is good, not great. And even their offense to a certain extent is very good, not necessarily a super high-powered, great type of offense. But the one thing Atlanta's proven this year is that they can win close games. They've been in close games all year long, and I think that will help them here come the postseason. I know those Seahawks corners are very big. They're strong. They're good players. But I think the way they put them out on islands sometimes, a corner, and they ask them to do a whole lot, I think you can get in a little trouble there with Roddy White and Julio Jones. I mean, Earl Thomas back there is one of the best ball-hawking safeties in the league. He's very effective. He made that great pick against RG3 on that deep pass. I think it was to Garcon on Sunday night. But I think the Falcons are a very balanced team. I think they have their way with the Seahawks. I think it's a close game, but I think they won by a touchdown.
And they lost Chris Clemens due to a torn ACL, their defensive end, one of their top pass rushers. That's a big loss for them as well.
And we talked about that bad field and how poor it was in that final regular season game against Dallas, and nobody could get their footing. Guys are slipping and sliding everywhere. The speed of the game was decreased. What happens? You watch the film of that play. Chris Clemens slips in the mud. His knee bends. Boom. Season over.
And you wonder if that played a role with respect to RG3. You know, it hurts their own players too, John. It's not just necessarily giving an advantage to Washington. So I'm really surprised with how they've maintained the field down south in D.C. because it's been treacherous for every team that has come to town. I mean, granted, the Redskins went on a great winning streak, but overall, now you're seeing the trend of a lot of guys get hurt. It could very well come back to haunt them, specifically to their quarterback situation, because you don't know if RG3 has a big rehab assignment ahead of him, depending on the severity of these partially torn or fully torn ligaments. It's going to be a big topic of discussion with respect to how coaches go about deciding whether or not to let their players remain in a contest. And, you know, it's hard to sit here and fault Mike Shanahan. You know, you want to go out, you want to win a playoff game, but clearly, start of the second half, he was off target with his throws, more so than we've ever seen throughout the course of this season, going back to when he initially hurt his knee with the Ravens. You have to say to yourselves, even if we keep our best quarterback in the game, are we putting ourselves in a position to win this game?
Now, I will say this. To me, people that said it was clear in the second quarter that RG3 should have been taken out of the game and he was done, I think that's jumping the gun a little bit.
I would agree.
I'll even argue at halftime, you weren't 100% sure that he had nothing left in the tank and couldn't help you. But I think once you got to the third quarter, and I bet you the knee tightened up a little bit at halftime, and that's probably what did it. You saw him running that one, you know, option play outside where he could barely move. You saw him being unable to plan throwing the football. To me, you're still in the game at that point. I believe the Seahawks were only up by a couple points. I think by 2 points before they got the touchdown, 2-point conversion. That, to me, is when you make the move to go to Cousins in that third quarter when you realize that RG3 can't help you. Because it was clear he re-injured himself in the first half. I know Andrew said this, he was medically cleared. RG3 wanted to play. And if you're a player, you want to play. God bless him. He's a tough kid. He wants to play. That's
And you
good.
Respect that, too.
You respect it, for sure. But I think that's when you make the move to Cousins in the third quarter, when you realize that not only are you putting Robert Griffin III's potential health in danger, but remember, Andrew said he was healthy enough to play, so it's not like he was going against doctor's orders here. But I think at that point you realize that, you know what, even as a thrower, his knee is so bad he can't plant and throw, that he has been taken out of the game here and is not going to be effective. That's when you go with Cousins.
And there's no guarantee that Cousins was going to come in and be a miracle worker.
Of course.
But you at least figure your offense could be more productive and perhaps you can, you know, get Alfred Morris heavily involved in the offense to get you back on track. Unfortunately, it did not work out for the Redskins. I'm sure Giants fans are not complaining. There are no more NFC East representatives in the postseason, so somebody outside of the division will be raising the Lombardi Trophy.
Hey, look, you watched that final regular season game, Dallas and Washington. How'd the Redskins beat the Cowboys? Running that lead dive option draw play, and even though RG3 wasn't 100% healthy in that game, he was certainly healthy enough where he could keep the ball and run for 8, 9, 10 yards on a play at a time. And that play simply got taken out of the playbook almost completely against Seattle, and that's their bread and butter.
Absolutely. I mean, listen, they have caused havoc for opposing defenses all season. We saw it twice with the Giants. You know, it's a very hard offense to adjust to. And even in that Week 17 game with the Cowboys, we had talked about this. DeMarcus Ware looked lost. You know, you think the guys are going right, and all of a sudden, in the blink of an eye, they're halfway down the field on the left sideline. You have to think quick when it comes to going up against the Redskins' offense. And that's why Washington jumped out to a 14-0 lead against Seattle. Seattle's a top-five defense. Tremendous game-changing playmakers on that squad. They were caught off guard early in that game. Then they slowly adjusted, and they made their fair share of adjustments. But that's why I felt if Washington got past Seattle, they would probably cause some havoc for Atlanta or San Francisco, whoever they would have wound up matching up with.
201-939-4513. Let's go to our buddy Ed down in Maryland. Ed, good morning.
Good morning, guys. Yeah, I seen a question posted on Facebook about Prince And do you guys think if he will be counted on to start next year for one of the cornerback spots? But it's a guy coming out from Rutgers that I want to know if y'all know about. His name is Logan Ryan. He's a cornerback, and he's looking like he's probably a first-round pick. And it seems like he might be in our area at pick 19. So I just want to hear from you guys if you know about Logan Ryan, and do you think the Giants should go first-round cornerback?
Ed, I got to be honest with you, I have not done any research yet on the college prospects. I'll be honest, I have not done that yet. But I would be surprised if the Giants took two cornerbacks in the first round in three seasons. I don't think it's something that they're ready to do. That being said, you know the Giants' philosophy. They're going to pick the best player on the board. And if the best player on the board, according to the way Jerry Reese and Mark Ross, if he's still here, obviously you know he's going on all these interviews, if they decide that a cornerback is the best player and the best value in their spot, that's who they're going to pick. But do I think they're going to go out there and particularly target a cornerback this year when they have two young guys that I think they trust and they have faith in to do a good job at Hosley and Prince of Mukamura? I don't think they're going to go out there and target a corner.
All right, that's true. And I heard Dave Gettleman is about to interview for some GM jobs. Is that true? And Mark Ross also?
Well, Mark Ross has been out there interviewing. I know there's been some reports about Dave Gettleman. We can't confirm those.
Yeah, I'm just asking because it just seems like the Giants are really willing to let guys that we need go, and some other teams want to take some other teams' coaches and GM people, they don't really let them just come and swipe them from the team. So I just want to know also, can the Giants put a clamp on some of those guys leaving us? Because if we lose Mark Ross and Dave Gettleman, that'll hurt us for the years to come, and I don't see us, you know, filling those guys' spots pretty easily.
Hey, look, Mark Ross and Gettleman are both very, very good at what they do. Mark with the college prospects, Dave Gettleman with the pro personnel. That being said, Ed, the way you run an organization, you cannot hold your people back from moving forward in their career. And if you do that, you're not going to get quality people to come work for you at those lower levels. For example, I'm a producer here. If the Giants would understand, if you know somebody comes to me and says, "John, we want you to do play-by-play for us on radio for the Seattle Seahawks," yeah, I get it's not the Giants, but guess what? I have to take the job, and the Giants will understand that. It's the same in any profession. If somebody's going to leave for a promotion, you understand it, and you don't want to be the organization that's holding people back because then you're not going to get good people.
Yeah, that's true, but I'm just saying that'll hurt to lose both guys at the same time. Maybe one this year, then maybe next year, Dave. But just lose two in the same offseason, that'll hurt. And I was just thinking because last year we lost Mike Sullivan, and like a couple years before that, we lost the previous quarterback coach, Chris Palmer. And I just noticed that maybe that might have been the reason for Eli struggling this year. And, you know, just tough to have that continuity when you have a guy that's been in place for years and all of a sudden somebody else comes and gets him. You know, so I just, you know, I mean, I know that's true. You know, they have like a better job elsewhere, they should take it. But, you know, if you lose two or three guys in the same offseason, that will hurt us. But
Well, Ed, I think that's also why you try to groom the people who are in place below these names that you just threw out so that they become familiar with the system and that they can fill the voids, just like a player roster. If you lose a corner, you hope that the next guy up is going to fill that void and the level of play will maintain its level of consistency. So I think that's how the Giants view their depth chart with respect to the front office. And also, what does it say about the Giants organization, Ed, that Mike Sullivan has been successful as an offensive coordinator with the Bucs? He helped turn Josh Freeman into a very up-and-down quarterback to the first half of the season, one of the best quarterbacks in the league. And you could say the same thing with respect to Palmer and other coordinators and other front office personnel that have gone across the NFL and onto bigger and better positions. I understand your point. It's definitely a catch-22. You want to maintain stability so that it could benefit your players and the organization. But as John pointed out, which I think was a great example, if you hold everybody back, how are you going to then bring new people in? They're going to say to themselves, if I come into the Giants organization, I'm going to be pigeonholed.
It's a dead-end career.
And then I'm not going to be able to advance. So I think you need to find the balance between both. You should be protective in some regard, but you also need to let guys spread their wings eventually.
Yeah, I just kind of think it's funny. They're all coming for everybody but Gilbride and Fuel. I just wonder why. But I just, I wish those guys stay like Mark Ross and Dave. So I just hope they, those teams find other GMs to fill those spots. But anyway, thanks, guys.
All right, I appreciate the call, man. Thanks a lot. And as you guys can notice, in this offseason, we'll have to give the calls a little more time to talk here. We'll go back and forth, have a nice conversation. One other point before I get to our next caller. Tyreek's been holding for a little while here. In terms of Dave Gettleman and pro personnel, they've already been grooming Ken Sternfeld to really take on that department. And he does an excellent job here. And Dave already kind of released the reins a little bit this past year to Kenny, and he's taken on a bigger role there. So that, I don't think, is as much of a hit, because I think that department is in really good hands with, Ken Sternfeld, Matt Schauger, all those guys. So they'll be fine. Replacing Mark Ross is a different story, and that is a huge, huge job. You'll probably bring somebody up from the scouting ranks that's been here for a while, that's already done all the homework and knows these college prospects. That's how Mark Ross got here, coming over from Philly. But that's a big job. And even going into that draft, they lean a lot on what Mark Ross tells them in that draft room in terms of who to pick. So you need to have someone in there that you trust, understands the college game, and more importantly, understands how success in college translates to the NFL level, because as it's been pretty clear over the years in the draft, it is an inexact science at best.
And there's five GM openings. You would assume they're going to fill up rather quickly. So in the event that the Giants do lose somebody in the front office, it won't be the night before the draft, per se. It would be at least a month or two so that they can have some prep work in place already to have somebody fill in.
And remember, folks, Ernie Accorsi is assisting that general manager search in Carolina. So it should be no surprise that they're talking to people here in the Giants organization, people that Ernie Accorsi worked very closely with.
Very small world in the NFL.
It is a very small world in the NFL. Very true. Big league, small world. 201-939-4513. Tyreek is in New Jersey. Good morning, Tyreek.
Good morning. How you doing, guys?
What's going on,
Tyreek?
How are
you?
I'm all right. This is the question I want to ask. I want to know why we don't, as a team, I understand, Jerry Reese's motto and their motto of the next man up, but why they don't go, okay, like we have the depth on the defensive line. Why we can't get that same type of depth in the secondary? For the last couple of years, we've lost Terrell Thomas, he gets hurt, he goes down, and then we kind of struggle in the secondary, and you got to do a pass job here and there. Why would he would not look? I understand he don't like, sometimes you like to go in the draft, maybe you can find some, maybe you can't, and sometimes you look in, in the free agency, and you may not find too much anything. But I want to know why he would not try to just get some type of depth so that as the season goes along, if somebody goes down, you got somebody reliable that can come in, fill in the spot, and maybe not do a great job, but can get you, something out of it. You can get something out of them. You can get some type of production where, you pretty much can skate by until, the starter gets healthy. Because I haven't seen that with the Giants in a long time. I understand how the preseason goes. We lose a guy or can't, like Ugamora when he got hurt. And we didn't really have nobody in the secondary, everything was all Lester. And he's getting his time's getting close. I looked at him, I watched him since he came out of LSU. His time's getting close. And they put all the pressure on him. He's always going against, the number one receiver. And he's not, as viable as he used to be. He's been injured. You got these guys coming in. Some guys, they stay healthy, they don't stay healthy, but that's the nature of the game. But I would love to see us have some type of depth in the secondary where we can rotate some guys, keep some guys fresh, even if it is you groom them and bring them in, see what they can do, and work them that way. But I haven't seen any depth in the secondary with the Giants, and I've been a Giants fan all my life.
Well, Tyreek, you're saying that you want to see them maybe bring in some healthy bodies, but if you're not going to do it through the draft, then the only option is really through free agency.
Through free agency, right.
Well, but keep
like
in mind,
I understand that.
I was going to say, you have those cap restraints when you're talking about free agency. Yeah. That's a big catch-22 in terms of who you could bring in, how much money you could spend. Remember, they had Aaron Ross last season. He was a free agent. So they didn't feel that they wanted to bring him back. He went to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Then they draft Jayron Hosley. So it was basically, you're down one guy, you bring in a youngster to fill that void. Corey Webster clearly got hurt. That was unexpected. And you're right, you need to anticipate. that players are going to get hurt. That's been a storyline and a plot for the Giants. So I'll give you that. They brought in the likes of a Tryon. They brought in Michael Coe. You know, Frederick they brought in towards the latter stages of the season. But, you know, these guys were just stopgaps. It's not necessarily players that you're going to rely on from down to down or from game to game.
Well, and Tyreek, if you go back to the training... Yeah, Tyreek, if you go back to the training camp roster, though, going into training camp, people are calling cornerback one of the deepest positions on the team, where a lot of people thought they had five or six starting quality players there. And you go back to it, Terrell Thomas goes down with the injury, one guy gone. Brian Witherspoon, who was having a tremendous offseason, he tears his ACL. He's done. Bruce Johnson, another guy they thought could potentially play significant time, he hurts his knee. He's out for the year. Michael Coe, another cornerback that has NFL experience, got picked up by the Cowboys later in the year. He goes out for the year with a leg injury. So you lose four cornerbacks that you thought could play and help you over the course of your offseason, and you go from all of a sudden having eight healthy bodies that can play to having four. Then Webster hurts his hamstring, breaks his hand, and then you blink your eye and all of a sudden, oh, crap, you don't have any depth. But that's more bad luck than I think it is lack of preparation. You know what I mean?
Right. I understand it. It's rough when you see that happen. It didn't happen to us so many times, and then you kind of struggled in the end, and, we pulled it out the Super Bowl season, with the injuries we had. We sustained so many before the regular season started that it's a struggle. It's a struggle. But, it is what it is. I understand that, their motto, next man up, they got to come in, they got to produce that. That's what they get paid to do. It's just rough, because I'm watching these playoffs and to see some of these teams. I know the Giants can beat some of these teams that's in the playoffs right now. It's rough to look at that and just see what the Giants sitting at home and these teams. Minnesota, that was disgusting. I was sick watching that.
I hear you, Tyreek, and thanks for the phone call. And I don't think the Vikings ever anticipated that Joe Webb was going to be in a position to start that game. Unfortunately, Christian Ponder suffers the elbow injury the week prior against the Green Bay Packers, so that's another example of just some bad luck at the wrong time.
I'll tell you what, though, too. That's when your pro personnel and scouting departments make their money. When your quarterback or any player on your roster goes down and you need the next guy to step up, look. It's great when a guy, when a college scouting department drafts a guy in the first round and he pans out, that's fine. It's great when a pro personnel guy says, yeah, we should give this guy an $8 million signing bonus and he pans out. That's great. But where these guys really make their money, and they do it with the Giants extremely well, is finding guys to fill out the bottom of that roster that can contribute in the case of an emergency. And you saw it in the case of Marcus Kuhn. You saw it in the place of a Will Hill. You saw it in those.
Even a Stevie Brown, too.
How about Kevin Booth?
Yeah.
They took Kevin Booth, who was a practice squad guy for a couple years, and turned him into a starting caliber offensive lineman. You go up and down the list. Jake Ballard, another perfect guy who nobody thought was going to do anything. He fills out the bottom of the roster. All of a sudden, he's making big catches, and you're starting tight end in the Super Bowl. That's when your pro personnel and your college scouting guys make their money. And they did not, in Minnesota, have a starting caliber, really, frankly, I'll use the word, competent backup quarterback that can come in and give you a chance to win. Joe Webb didn't have a chance in that playoff game.
Mitch Petras, another name I'll throw out there with respect to the Giants. Finding these guys that can buy into the system and that you could plug in.
Ahmad Bradshaw, 7th-round pick back in 2007. Andre Brown, 6th-round pick. Granted, he popped his Achilles, he bounced around a little bit, but he turns out to be a player. So you go down these lists, and you can find these guys. Victor Cruz, perfect example. Shows up here for the local workout. Yeah. Kid from New Jersey, makes a mark. And all of a sudden, you got a guy making the Pro Bowl.
And just real quickly, piggybacking off of the point that you brought up in Tyreek's question about where the Giants should go in terms of the depth of corner, and you listed everybody that got hurt this season. That's why it's hard to fault the Giants for not being at least aggressive in building up the depth chart. It was in perfect position heading into training camp. The problem is you don't account for five or six guys getting hurt.
Well,
and
you
then
can't account for
you
that.
Can't.
It's impossible.
And then the problem is, so now you're into week one or week two. What are your options? You're not grabbing a guy off the street. Maybe you're putting in a waiver claim for a guy that gets cut, right. But is that going to be a long-term answer for you the rest of the season?
Heck, even if it's not one or two of the regular season, if you're in the third week of training camp, you're just trying to pick guys off another roster's cut list at that point. And then you got to bring him in. And frankly, you're probably not going to get a real player until final cuts happen the weekend before the first regular season game. So at that point, you're looking at bringing somebody in, and in the Giants' case this year, playing on Thursday, the opening week of the season, having about 3 or 4 days to teach them your defense and get them ready for the game. It's just not going to happen.
Not practical. And not everybody's like Chase Blackburn, and I keep bringing up that example. Last season, he comes off the street. They insert him into that Packers game. He picks off Aaron Rodgers. He gives the Giants' defense a lift. Chase Blackburn's the exception because he already knew the playbook. That wasn't the case, for example, with a Lumpkin and a Terrain. These guys need time to adjust to the offense and the defense. It's a complex scheme.
You know, Lance, this guy calls in the Big Blue Hits a lot on Thursday. I'm not sure if you've heard from him yet on these morning shows, but our good buddy Kaiser is up in the Bronx. Kaiser, good morning. How are you?
Make it Yonkers.
Oh, that, the Yonkers in the Bronx. Isn't that the same thing?
Yeah, kind of. It's an extension.
What's
anyway,
up?
I have a question for Lance, and then I have a question for John.
Sure.
Lance, if John does indeed go to Seattle, do the Giants get a compensatory?
That's a very good question. We'll have to start the negotiating right now.
12th rounder, I think.
It would be rather low, though. Don't expect to get a gem out of that pick, I'll tell you that.
And then, of course, John, if you do go, would you introduce me to Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks? Because I just love Sleepless in Seattle.
Kaiser, going off the beaten path.
Wow.
I like it.
Bringing it today.
That's all I have for you guys today.
Thank you, Kaiser. I wonder how long it took Kaiser to, you know, sitting down to try to figure out those two gems. It was a good lie,
that
though.
That was a very good lie.
On the compensatory drafting. I thought that was pretty funny.
What Seattle would give back for a John Schmelk. I don't know what you're going rate these days.
Gift basket? Yeah, maybe some nice chocolate, some cookies, something
some
like that.
Some fruits, too, will work in the mix.
I mean, if you have to send fruit, I guess you could take some fruit. But I think everybody's really looking for the candy, not necessarily the fruit in that situation.
What about some seafood, considering, you know, they're known for that?
Okay.
We'll get that, you know, get a taste on the East Coast of the West Coast seafood.
Maybe like a live performance from Pearl Jam or something like that.
Seattle
send me some music
in.
Back, some Starbucks. Something like
that. We're going to have to get creative, clearly, as an organization.
How about, like, Rick Meyer? You could send Rick Meyer back this way.
Wow. Well, I mean, why don't we just bring the entire Supersonics team, too, in response? Maybe get Frank Borkowski or Gary Payton?
Gary Payton and Sean Kemp can, like, throw alley-oops in your backyard.
There you go.
How about that?
Yeah. We'll try to entertain the Giants' faithful.
Do you think Sean Kemp can still dunk the basketball?
Boy, that may be a stretch at this point. Have you seen Sean Kemp?
Sean Kemp has gotten very large.
Yes, Sean Kemp's not Sean Kemp. He's maybe Sean Kemp squared. So, be quite complex to pull that off.
Yeah. Anyway, 201-939-4513. See, Kaiser got us distracted.
Yes, exactly. Well, he helped us fill an extra 5 minutes
yes.
on today's show.
Never easy
We're
in
very
the offseason, right?
Anyway,
we talked about two of the other postseason games. I want to touch on the other two very quickly. Andy Dalton, he looked terrible against the Texans. And I don't say that lightly. It just seemed like one of those games. He looked like a rookie quarterback again. I thought Andy Dalton took some real nice steps this year as a player. But against the Texans in that game, Lance, it looked like as soon as that first read he had wasn't there, he would tuck the ball and try to run it. There just wasn't a whole lot for him. He didn't scan the field well. He didn't see the field well. He just seemed lost out there, to be honest with you.
Well, in his defense, number one, I think the Texans' defense probably played its best in weeks. We have not seen the Texans' defense perform like the way it did in that playoff game. And number two, multiple drop passes for the Bengals. Jermaine Gresham had a lot of opportunities. A.J. Green was nowhere to be found. I mean, have they found A.J. Green yet? Has he been spotted? Because
yes.
After that game, I mean, it was hard to find his number. And granted, part of it was because of the attention that the Texans' defense was giving him. So, you know, jokes aside. But maybe that's another example that, you know, you get through the regular season without a complimentary third receiver. You come to the postseason, you need that third or fourth option. And I don't know if Cincinnati had that. And remember, Ben Jarvis Green Ellis entered this game with a hamstring injury, so he was not 100%.
Yeah, Hawkins is a pretty good receiver out of the slot. He didn't do a whole lot. You mentioned Jermaine Gresham. Headed issues in that contest. And you're right, maybe that's one of the investments they need to make in the offseason. If you want to build around a young quarterback, you got to give him weapons to succeed. And if you don't, your guy could fail. Just look at Mark Sanchez with the Jets. And if you want to build around Andy Dalton, give him guys to throw the football.
They also lost Mohamed Sanu, remember, who filled in for the injured Hawkins.
Was that an ACL?
He got hurt. I believe it was. They had lost him for the
Sanu?
Season.
ACL?
Sanu, the former Rutgers.
It was ACL,
wide.
Right? Yeah, I thought so.
So that was another big loss. But
and he's
you know,
probably not going to be back until probably you know a few weeks into the season next year.
And Cincinnati, you know, given what they've been through in terms of the turnover to a younger roster, I mean, you have to give them a lot of credit, winning 7 of 8, getting themselves in a position to advance to the postseason. Also, they had a 9-game losing streak against the Steelers and the Ravens. They finally got that big win.
Correct.
So there were certainly signs of progress. I think Mike Zimmer did a great job with that defense, but unfortunately...
Getting the head coaching job, by the way.
And that was a topic of discussion even on the broadcast.
Mike Mayock made the point, and he's 100% right. That guy deserves an interview, at least an interview. He really deserves a job.
And he supposedly has had conversations with, I think, the NBC broadcast team leading up to the game and said, I'm even surprised that I have not been getting enough attention with respect to head coaching opportunities.
And he has gotten interviews in the past. It's not like he's been shut out of the interview process. He just never got a job. But he's a good coach. He really deserves a longer look.
And the other reason why it's so surprising that he hasn't gotten a look, you look across the NFL now, you know, all of these reports that Chip Kelly is now going to stay in Oregon. You know, that was a big name. John Gruden, who knows if he's going to get back in the mix.
I don't think Gruden will, to be honest with you.
I know maybe the Eagles have some interest, or at least there's some mutual interest. Whether or not it pans out to anything remains to be seen.
He's making all that money at ESPN. He has no pressure. He hangs out in that stupid trailer. I mean, do you really want the stress? Seriously. I know you love coaching. It's what you love to do. All right? That being said, Gruden already has a Super Bowl, okay? He won a Super Bowl with Tampa Bay. He's getting paid all this money for ESPN to basically spat at the mouth, do one game a week, making millions of dollars. Does John Gruden really need to get back into the coaching if he doesn't find that perfect spot? Now, if you want to come back and pick up a ready-made team, for example, if Dallas fired Jason Garrett and Gruden could step in, just as an example, could step into that situation, you have a very good quarterback in place already, you have a young dynamic wide receiver, a young running back that knows what he's doing. Yeah, you got to rebuild the offensive line. Miles Austin makes a lot of money this year. Maybe you have to make a decision on him. You have Jason Witten in place. You have some nice pieces on defense if guys come back and they're healthy. That, to me, is a spot where I think John Gruden could come back. I don't see him coming back somewhere where you're going to have to rebuild, like Philly or even to a certain extent Cleveland, who at least is a star of that rebuilding process and they're making their way back.
Well, the other thing, it would be very interesting to see if Gruden could coexist with Jerry Jones, but that may be a whole other topic of discussion. But here's the other thing that I'm
going to
throw out.
Hard Knocks is back on HBO, baby.
Must-see TV.
Chucky and Jerry.
Here's a better hypothetical for John Gruden.
Okay.
If he gets offered the Seahawks color commentator job to work alongside John Schmelt in the radio booth, that is the big question that he's going to have to determine. Is that a big step in the right direction with respect to his career, or is it a step back after working Monday Night Football?
My guess, Gruden is going to want to bring in his own guy, and I think Schmelke might be out of there.
I don't know.
And that is definitely a step back, by the way.
I think there will be some heavy lifting in terms of his thinking in the offseason if that job ever came his way.
201-939.
And maybe Giants fans want to weigh in on that as well.
Well, Giants fans just want to get rid of me, so they'll be 100% behind that. 201-939-4513. Oh, Dave in Rochester, New York. We haven't heard from Dave in a while. Dave, good morning.
Good morning, buddy. Thanks for taking my call. Nice to hear you.
Hey, what's going on, Dave? Good to hear from you.
I was thinking, I read in the post that, forgive me if you talked about Cruz and his contract a little bit, but what if he does get the big money? And we got Akeem Nicks. I believe his contract will be up at the end of the next season. Are we going to be able to afford keeping all of our receivers, Ruben Randall, Cruz, and all those guys? If he does sign something big, would we be able to afford all that?
I could barely figure out the Giants' cap situation this year. So looking at the next year and figuring out where the Giants are at their cap, that's too difficult at this point, to be honest with you. Look, there's a way to renegotiate contracts, cut people, where if you want to keep Cruz and Nicks, you'll be able to do it. You'll have to make sacrifices elsewhere, but you're going to be able to do it. Next year, to me, Dave, is a huge year for Akeem Nicks. I agree with you. I think Cruz will get his money this offseason. They'll bring him back. They'll sign him to an extension, and they'll be on their merry way. That's fine. Now, the question, though, like you just mentioned, what do you do with Akeem Nicks next year? And I think next year is a very important year for him where he has to come back and be able to stay healthy for an entire season. He's been banged up for parts of seasons the last 3 or 4 years. This year, it was the worst of it. He was never healthy, not the same type of guy. If he can come back next year, stay healthy, be that same wide receiver he was back in 2011, I think you have to give serious thought to bringing him back. But that's also going to depend, Dave, on what Ruben Randle does. Does Ruben Randle show you enough next year where you think he can take over and be that complement to Victor Cruz, where you have him on the contract for a couple more years under not a lot of money, then you can afford to let Akeem Nicks go. So I think it's a very big decision. It's a delicate decision, but it's one the Giants still have a year to make. No reason to jump the gun on it right now.
Right. Okay. All right, guys. Thanks a lot. Talk to you soon.
Hey, appreciate it, Dave. Thanks for the call. That was the Rochester call that I couldn't remember last week when we were talking about the guy from Rochester that used to call all the time. I couldn't think of his name. That's Dave. We love Dave.
Every Giants caller is known for their little niche. We all welcome them here on Big Blue Kickoff each and every morning. And just piggybacking off of what Dave was just touching on, you know, with Akiem Nicks, and you alluded to this, John, you know, next season is a big statement year for him. And I know that's kind of weird to say given Akiem Nicks' track record, but what I mean by it's a statement season for him regarding the financial situation and whether or not the Giants want to determine whether they should lock him up, and if they do, how much money, and what are we talking about? Because, you know, right now I think it's too premature for the Giants to say and go to Akiem Nicks and, you know, we're ready to lock you up and we're ready to give you this amount of years and this amount of money. He's coming off an injury-plagued season where he struggled with the knee and the foot. Are you really in a position as an organization right now when you know that you have to re-sign Beedy, you have other areas of concern outside of wide receiver, the Victor Cruz contract situation, that you want to now jump the gun on a guy that's already under contract for next season and lock him up? I don't know if the Giants could say that they're in that position right now.
Well, I'm sure they can go to Akiem Nicks and say, we'll pay you like a 50-catch wide receiver like he did this year, and Akiem Nicks is going to go tell you to walk off a cliff, which is understandable. He wants to get paid like the guy was back in 2011. So I think maybe statement year might be the wrong term, but it's definitely a cash year for Akiem Nicks, where he's going to determine, based on his production, what type of contract he gets, whether it's from the Giants or from somebody else.
And you would assume if Akiem Nicks gets back to the level that he has played the last couple of seasons, the cash will be led his way. And number two, the Giants as a team will be more consistent. You know, it's been a big topic of discussion the last few weeks here on Giants.com, why the Giants offense was so Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. The center of the issue is Akiem Nicks, and Tom Coughlin touched on this, Jerry Reese touched on this after the season. Akiem Nicks was never 100%, and the rest of the offense struggled because he wasn't drawing his double teams. He was a step back in terms of getting off the line. That's why, with a whole off-season ahead of him, if he gets back to full health, it's going to mean good things for this entire organization.
And your quarterback's going to be better. Eli Manning had a down year, and a big reason he had that down year was that Akiem Nicks injury. So the Giants would love nothing more. They would love nothing more than for Akiem Nicks to come back next year, have an 85 catch, 1,100 yards, 9 touchdown year, and they have an extremely difficult decision to make on how much they want to invest in Akiem Nicks. Because that means he came back, he had a great year, and quite frankly, if you have Victor Cruz and Akiem Nicks both have great years next year, odds are the Giants are in the playoffs.
And Reuben Randle continues to progress as potentially a third receiver. I know you said that the Giants most likely will at least try to bring back Dominic Hickson.
In my opinion, I think they will. I don't know anything, but in my opinion, I think they will.
And then see what they do with respect to the tight end position. Clearly, Martellus Bennett has shown a desire that he wants to return. If they can get him at the right price and it works out under the cap, you bring him back. You know, John, what we just laid out on paper, if everybody stays healthy, that's a nice mix on offense to have.
Don't forget Ramses Barden.
Well, I mean, how could I overlook that name? But remember, Ramses Barden is a free agent.
But you can't teach height.
I know. Well, they're going to have to find height elsewhere.
You got to pay him like $1 million for every inch he is over 6'3".
I'm surprised, actually, that we have not gotten any phone calls about Ramses Barden and what the Giants are going to do with him this offseason.
Here's what we're going to do. Tomorrow, when we post our questions on Facebook and Twitter, when we advertise the show in the morning, we will make a couple pending free agents the topic of conversation, and maybe we can slip Ramses Barden's name in there.
I like that.
And generate some attention. Your thoughts?
A huge topic of discussion, Ramses Barden. I mean, how many times did you get so chippy and worked up this season?
You started getting chippy about it at the end
of
the year.
There was a point where I even reached my boiling point.
Yes.
You know, maybe it took me about 7 or 8 weeks, but then you get the calls about how Ramses Barden is the answer to all the Giants' offensive struggles, and I wanted to put my head in my hands every 5 seconds.
Well, I think the best one was when they said he should start over not only Akiem Nicks, but also Victor Cruz. That was the one that got you.
Well, that's when we're really digging deep here, Giants fans, when you know you want to bench your number one wide receiver for Ramses Barden. Something's not clicking there.
And again, folks, this is nothing against Ramses Barden, but again, Akiem Nicks and Victor Cruz have the track record here. You're not sitting those guys down for someone that has limited success at the NFL level.
And, you know, everybody's basically trying to find an answer this season for Mario Manningham. because Manningham left via free agency, signed with the Niners, and it was unfortunate because he also suffered a torn ACL, so he's not going to help them in their playoff push.
Another reason I like the Packers this week, by the way, just a little preview of our picks, and both of us were terrible last week.
I know. Well, I notice how I haven't even alluded to that. And you probably went over them yesterday, and
I did
said
not,
to myself,
actually.
I'm glad I wasn't even here.
Oh. I purposely did not go over them yesterday, well, actually. I was waiting
Colts
for you.
The Colts was a reach pick, which I made clear because I was trying to gain some ground.
Yeah, but
and they
was,
were in the game.
It were the picks we agreed on that we did so poorly on, though. That was the problem.
But remember, you did say after we made all the picks, John, that Texans fans should be excited.
I did.
What was
I
the other?
That.
The you know, Colts fan, no, Ravens fan should be excited. Well, the Packers we picked, so Vikings fans had
and
nothing
Seahawks
to be excited.
Fans.
And Seahawks fans.
Yes,
everyone had a reason to be excited because every time we pick a team, the opposite always happens.
Yeah, so you went 1-3,
no
and
surprise.
I went 2-2. So,
boy, talk about the battle of mediocrity.
Yeah, well, I mean, I am on the season. It's 5 games over .500. That's not bad.
So how far behind?
Well, I can do that right now. All right. So you actually went 0-1-3. The Packers are the only game you got right, correct?
Yeah. Correct. That was
so
it.
You were 46-49 heading in. Now you're 47-52, which is, you know, 5 games under. I went 2-2, so I'm 52-47. Reversals on the record there, so I have a 5-game lead. And there are 7-8, excuse me, with the Super Bowl NFL games left in the National Football League season.
So I'm pretty much going to have to go against you with every pick, essentially. I'm just going to have to hope that there's some upsets in the weeks coming to gain some serious ground on you.
Yeah, you're going to have to be opposite me on a minimum of 5 games to tie, 6 games to win. And you're going to have to get all of those games right.
Well, expect that to happen this coming weekend. That's a little preview for what to expect on Friday.
Oh, boy.
Because I will be going against you in multiple games.
Lance a long shot in more ways than one.
Well, we got to dig deep to try to get past you at this point. You know, there's not many tricks that I can come up with. It's very late in the season. We're in desperation mode.
All right, before we say goodbye, let's decide on what we want our Facebook topic to be for tomorrow's show to generate some caller action. What do you think?
Well, I like where you were headed. I think that the big question is, of all the Giants free agents, and maybe we can list 5, who is the most imperative to bring back?
Or we could stick with a position group that has a lot of free agents. Maybe how do you see the Giants' wide receiver position shaping up next year with free agents such as Ramsey's Barden, Martellus Bennett, and Travis Beckham, something like that.
And Dominic Hickson, too.
Dominic Hickson, too, of
free
course. Yeah, that's
well.
Great.
Yeah.
I think we
can
go there.
Restrict it that way.
You like
if you
that?
If you want to be a little close-minded, that's fine.
Well, I think if we open it up to everything in one show, we kind of run out of things to talk about over the next month.
So we'll start small, and we'll gradually open the topic of discussion.
You do want us to keep paying you to show up for
yes,
the show,
without
don't
a doubt.
You?
Listen, okay. I'll sit here and talk about anything. You guys want to break down the third right tackle on this roster? We'll sit down and we'll break it down. You want to talk about the 7th running back? We'll do it. You want to break down the practice squad? We're here for you.
Selvish Capers talk. Of the
yes,
3 weeks
Capers.
Of Giants talk.
We'll spend an entire hour the biography of Selvish Capers. Isn't it coming to a football life? Isn't that an introduction? John Schmelt's going to make a cameo. By the way,
oh, no.
and this doesn't get brought up
what
too
hell?
Often. No, we just need to make sure that people who have not seen the Tom Coughlin piece, which,
by
the way, in
already.
All seriousness, is a great piece.
It is, it is a
life.
Great
and,
piece.
No joking here. Correct. It is a great piece. And honestly, Giants fans, if you haven't had a chance to see it, really, you should try to go out of your way to watch that.
And you'll get to see the real rock of that Coughlin household, Tom's wife, Judy, who does an excellent job. Lovely woman. One of the nicest women you'll ever meet. And she really is the star of that. Of that hour program.
And it also brought out a different side of Tom Coughlin that not everybody gets to see a lot. But towards the latter stages of the show, and this is the best part to look forward to in a football life, there is a cameo of John Schmelk. Very short, very sweet, not a big portion of the show, but he's got some FaceTime with Tom Coughlin and Judy Coughlin, and I'm just going to tease it that way. I don't want to give any hints away what John may be doing. You got to look carefully. It's like, where's Waldo when you're watching the show? But that is what I will leave you with today.
Now, we do show highlights from Tom Coughlin's J-Fund Ice Cream Social on that show, and what people don't notice is that you don't notice Lance there because he blends in with all the little kids.
Oh, here we go.
So, there you go.
That was a good
look
comeback by you.
You like that one?
You were quick. You know, you didn't take some time. You didn't need to recover the rest of the day and bring it to the table tomorrow. I'm impressed.
That's what you need. When things don't go exactly right for you, you need to recover. Step back out when you have your next opportunity, and you got to make sure you get the job done in everything in life.
Yes, I was going to say, you were alluding to other facets of life with that.
We'll see you tomorrow morning.
Sounds good.
Thank you, everybody, for calling in the Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. For Let's Go, I'm John Schmoke. Everyone have a fantastic day. We'll see you tomorrow morning, 9:30. Be there.
Have a good one.